My name is Serena Korka and I welcome you to my podcast, Dein Musikleben. I have studied classical singing and I love to sing contemporary experimental music of any kind. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekorka.de. And you could also subscribe to my monthly newsletter. Then you're informed about anything I do. I talk in this podcast around themes all around contemporary music and contemporary music life. I share with you behind the scenes the insider knowledge, and I really want to bring the human beings out of this amazing world closer to you. I'm thanking every one of you who is listening to this podcast today. I'm thanking everyone who is writing me and giving me feedbacks. I'm also so thankful that sometimes I sing a concert somewhere or I show up in the audience and people who are also in the audience come up to me and tell me, I'm listening to your podcast. That is very touching to get in touch with you and to know some of my people in the audience. So thank you that you come up to me and say hi. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung, which is one of the most important German music papers here. We're going to get into the summertime again, and as also in the last year, I'm gonna present to you some best of episodes. Best of means that I look into all the numbers, the statistics of the downloads, and then I see what you listened to most, and we're gonna review those episodes. So in this episode, I'm going to talk to the composer Antoine Beuger. Hi Antoine.
Hi Irene.
Nice that you're here and we can do this interview together.
Yes.
My first question for you is, how did you find your way into new music?
Well, in the end, I didn't really find my way into new music. I'm certainly not part of the new music world, so to say, even though I come from, or I studied composition and so on, nearly from the beginning, I rather prefer to see what I do as experimental music, whatever that is. It's also not a very precise term. New music, I have the impression, meanwhile, is kind of a brand name where there is a kind of quality norm. You know, there's a way of knowing how something is good or bad, or who is good or bad, who is a good or bad player, and things like that. And it's also specific, meanwhile, quite a specific way of going about things that develop. Like, you go to festivals, there's this and that, and here are the people who curate, and here are the people who do this and that, and orchestras have meanwhile took on the duty of playing at least a certain percentage of their program newer contemporary music as a kind of a duty, most of them, and so on. It's kind of a fairly regulated and environment circling in itself in a way. where since a long time I don't feel really very much connected to. At the same time, there are many, many other music scenes, sort of improvised music, independent rock or folk music, or all kind of worlds that I would now call different musical practices that are in a way much more alive and much more, I have the impression, you know, where things are at stake and where there's interesting involvement also back and forth. So for what I do or what we do as in Wandelweiser environment, the interest comes from everywhere, not from new music world, which is fine because I'm not interested in it either. I cannot be very excited about it. So yeah.
And what kind of new music do you like to listen to?
It's hard to say. It's mostly like individual pieces, or in like, so it's not a style or a kind of. I don't really relate to this way of thinking. All of a sudden, one piece by Gérard Griset can really catch me and touch me and get me interested. Or recently, I discovered. You know, I'm always kind of searching to find things that, or to encounter music that really does something with me. And recently, I can't tell why or so. I'm very, very moved by the music of a young Estonian composer whom I had never heard of before. And I'm regularly listening to her SoundCloud page, more and more surprised about it. It doesn't sound anywhere near what I'm doing or what some others are doing, but there is something in that music that really catches me, and much more than many other things. Not the style, it's not the kind of music, it's, I don't know.
So it has to catch you.
Yeah, or, you know, recently I'm going to concerts to hear Bruckner symphonies live. And these are important experiences, for encounters for me. So I like to listen to music when this listening is part of an encounter, a real encounter that has consequences.
What are the qualities you most appreciate in performers you work with?
Engagement. Because when it comes to real engagement, then it's not a composer working with a performer, then it's two people engaged in a musical situation where each of them maybe contributed something, but it's something they have created together. So in the best case, a composer is never working with performers. Because then it's not about work, it's not about this kind of relationship, which is nearly like sounds like employer and employee or something, or another kind of non-symmetrical relationship. It's creator and helper or something. I don't think there is this hierarchy, and to the contrary, I would rather say that it's always the players who make the music, and only there the music exists. In order to have a musical situation like that, you have to play something. And this can be something the performer composed himself or herself, or that another person made. But it's the most rewarding when it's something you're both part of. And I think I think many composers suffer from this separation. They are not part of something. They are like someone coming up with something that he tries to place somewhere on the market, and hopes that there will be people who can do it. And sometimes people are like engaged to do it and things like that. And rarely composers are also players. And even in the composer education, it's kind of taught not to play too much, because it's kind of, you should focus on composing. And at least that's what my students tell me often. So ideally, composers and players and listeners are all part of one practice that is meaningful to them. There have been times where it was different. Joseph Haydn had his job, he worked there, he had his players. And, well, or better, the Duke or whoever had his musicians. And one of them was maybe a composer, but he certainly also played himself or conducted or gave lessons, like Bach or so. So the composer was just part of the game. That's why he doesn't need a lot of notation, because he just has to notate as much as the players need to play, because they'll understand anyway. There's no phrasing in Bach's scores, because the musicians knew how to do it anyway, or Bach was sure that they knew it anyway. So, and it's not that they were not interested in phrasing, but they solved it amongst each other. And Charlie Parker's scores are very rudimentary, but enough to get wonderful music going, because everybody knew what they were talking about. And so I think, I don't know, I always dreamt of being part of a meaningful practice rather than sitting somewhere separated from the world and inventing something that I hope I can get somehow sold, you know, to put it very drastically.
You also have a mentoring program for composers for a few years now. What do you do with them and how does it work and how can I apply for it?
You want to apply for it?
I hope some of the listeners will.
This maybe I'll just tell how it started, and it was not my invention. It was basically a young Canadian composer, or not even all that young Canadian composer, who called me up one day in 2008, whether I think it would be possible for him to come to Düsseldorf and have like a period of 3 or 4 weeks where we would have lessons, or he called it a period of intensive study, and he had a plan with themes and timings and everything. And of course, I thought, no, why not? But let's try it. It sounds like something that I could like. And then he came, and then instead of, you know, meeting every day for 2 hours between 1 and 3, we just were together all the time and were talking and doing and talking and going and so. And it became incredibly intense, and I mean, in a beautiful way, and like two people really meeting each other and talking about things that the other could really understand, and so we were both completely surprised and completely happy with that. And then in the months after that, you know, it was resonating so much with me, and then I thought, what about, you know, just opening this up for other people too, like who are interested in that kind of meeting or encounter. And then I kept thinking about how to call it, and so, and I spoke a lot with André, this composer, and he helped me. He had to write a report about it, and so he gave me a lot of words and insight into how it worked for him as a student. And then I all of a sudden I thought, yeah, maybe I could call it mentoring. And then the idea was born, so to say. With the help of André, I made a kind of a description of it, and thought, okay, let's just put it on the Wandelweiser website. And then, you know, I wasn't expecting anything. Same evening, a young American composer wrote me an email. A dream came true. When can I come? This really was the text of the email, and I couldn't believe it. It was like it was online maybe for at most an hour or two. Since then, I haven't done anything else in terms of marketing or announcing or so. Just only that. And meanwhile, I think 35 persons from all over the world came. I couldn't believe it. I still can't believe it. But it's, yeah. And I think they really come to meet me. Probably when I would have suggested this when I was 40, or nobody would have come. You don't go to a 40-year-old man to because you think, you know, that's my idea, my impression, that now I'm a bit older and people can see this guy has been persistent and has been true to his thing without any success in a way, or without striving for success in an economic way, or in a way of recognition or so. And he's still there, and he's still doing it, so it gives them trust and confidence that it's possible. And so then, yeah, someone writes an email, I heard about your mentoring, and they tell something about themselves, and do you think it would be possible for me, and so on. And then I've never rejected anyone, because it, you know, people of course only approach me when they really think it makes sense. And it's often young people, 23, 24 years old, and so they are sometimes or mostly in a position to get some grant or so from the country where they are in, and it's not really expensive either. Other people who were considering doing mentoring were kind of shocked. And they said, well, you know, I cannot do it for that money. But I think I keep these prizes because it's affordable, and it's also everybody sees it's not about making money. It's more like, yeah, there must be something to make it possible for me to kind of spend this time with someone, because otherwise I would have to look for a job. And
you are part and even the grounder of Wandelweise. What exactly is Wandelweise, or how would you explain it in a few words to people who might not have heard of it already?
So Wandelweise is the name of a group of people. Some people talk about the Wandelweise Collective. It has now become kind of commonplace to talk about the Wandelweise Collective. It's not a collective in any sense, in any like regular sense of the word. It's something that happens between an increasing number of people, apparently, friendships develop between composers, musicians, poets, visual artists, filmmakers, for whatever reason. And these friendships kind of connect further, so you get some kind of a net of friendships. All these people have their own practices somewhere in the world, and seem to be very eager to to know about each other, what they are doing, to invite each other back and forth, but without a plan, without a obligation. Nobody is obliged to invite or to do something with everybody else or so. So it's very distinct friendships that are connected because people are involved in these friendships, have friendships with other ones, and so. And the whole thing is very much carried by an enormous curiosity and desire, I can say, to support and be supported by each other. We are all doing things that are strange in a way, or that are like, yeah, non-standard. And so we are all walking in very uncertain territory. So we all need support from the others to keep the strength and to keep the courage to continue. So we're not there to establish a brand, we're not there to establish a style, or we're not there to be like business partners or to help each other make a career. We are there to support each other walk in uncharted territory and to encourage each other to not give up.
But you also have you publish the scores and yeah. You publish CDs, so in that way you're quite successful. I mean, you have plenty of CDs now and they're sold worldwide.
Yeah.
How many CDs are there now?
I think the catalog has about 115 or so items.
That's really great.
Yeah. That's a little shop, a little business that I now personally do. It's not like the collective, or although of course it's completely open and transparent and everything, so everybody who wants to take part or do something has my support in that label. But like the Handelweiser goes much, much beyond this, like a little publishing company, or it's a way maybe for people who want that to make each other visible for the outside world, if you like, but that's basically all. We need, for each CD we need like external financing, because we have no money. There's no business wise. This is a very small enterprise, and as long as I do it, I'll make sure that it will stay like that. So there's no, if there would be any like gain or profit from the operations, then I would immediately use it for projects. So it's, in a sense, it's a non-profit thing, although it has the look of a company.
You also have been doing concerts for many years now in Düsseldorf. Mm-hmm. It's called Klangraum, and it starts again this summer on the 24th of July. And you developed a new format, which we now do the second time this year. We did it last year. I also was part of it. I really enjoyed it. Can you tell us what this format, what the program is about, and what you want to establish with this, or what is this experience about at Klangraum in the summertime?
So talking about this year and last year, it's the idea is that a group of people comes together for about a week, and for that week we are like a little community. And each day we get ourselves involved in a series of things, like can be a piece, and then at another time maybe a poem or a theater something, or and this is repeated on five consecutive days. So basically from day to day the same things happen, same or similar things, and it's like a, you know, some things you'll be involved in like actively, but other things you'll be involved in as a listener for the others, or it is as far away from a normal concert as possible. It's just a gathering where people play music for each other, and without the pressure of a presentation. Audience is very welcome, and there's always people around, but they are just sharing in a way. They're present at what we do, much like maybe going to what you call the offices in a monastery. The monks or the nuns, they will do what they do, and you are very welcome to be present at it, but they are not performing something for you. They're not reaching out for you. They're also not advertising, come to our Vespers or something. They're not like rehearsing. Well, they are not afterwards saying, well, this time we weren't so good, and or there were only three people in the church. No, it's this is what we do. And the doors are wide open. Everybody can be. But it's not... It's not about entertainment. It's not about presenting things. It's not a festival in that sense. It's sharing, and to make, you know, to take all pressure away. The program is in a way very minimal. It's maybe six things over the course of a day, and next day it's the same six things. And this last year turned out to be a beautiful experience, to be, you know, to enter the world of these different things from day to day. And after a few days you couldn't, it was hard to imagine that this wouldn't go on forever. And all of a sudden it's the fifth day, the last day of that process, and then each thing gets a special importance because it's the last time. and so on. It's a very interesting dynamic. Also, you see people coming very near to each other, and you see, people wanting to do things, to try out things together, or to talk with each other. Or it's a very, very personal atmosphere, and it's one of the participants told me last year that she felt that, you know, this was like being remembered of this original dream she had when she wanted to become a musician. You want to become a musician to make music with each other and to have deep musical experiences, which are always like social experiences and experiences with other people and experiences about how we would like to really deal with each other. So she felt like, yeah, now I remember, this is what I always wanted, you know, how I... it's not about finding performers for your piece or, you know, things like that, or hoping that the critics will have mercy with you or things like that. It's nothing about that.
What are you thankful for today?
Today?
Yeah, in this moment, or in these hours.
In this moment, I'm grateful for the interview you wanted to do.
That's a nice answer, Antoine.
Yeah. I'm having a mentoring student at the moment, and I'm very grateful for how this, again, is a really strong experience of someone really flourishing and what am I grateful for? You know, in a way, being a composer has a lot to do with being grateful. And I think it's a bit underestimated, the importance of being grateful. We are not creators. I think we are not making things. We are, in a way, I mean, it may sound strange, but we are like approached by pieces or musical situations that kind of knock on our door and say, I'd like to be real. And then we have to find a way to make them become real. And that's always a gift. It's like the gift of life, you know. We haven't created ourselves, or I'm not the one who gave me life. But I've been given to myself. And I think there's nothing more wonderful than being able to be grateful for that gift. You know, some people are born in difficult, very difficult situations. For them, it's maybe not so easy to be grateful. because their whole life is maybe marked by suffering and pain. Often, though, it's exactly these people who are more grateful than the people who have not experienced suffering or doubt or whatever pain or hardship. One young composer once asked me, it was not someone who came to me for mentoring, but I met this person in another context, and he says, "Do you really think that players are doing us a favor?" Because I told him that I think it's important to be grateful as a composer. And if you work with a performer or with people, then the first thing is to be grateful that they care about your music at all. Do you really think? That's what they're paid for. I couldn't believe the words of a young composer. And this composer was struggling a lot because he always had difficulties with the players. His music was like, and it was like not a big pleasure for the people to play. It put them to great strains. And he was like acting like a real authority who has the power to tell them to work harder and things like that. So this poor guy, one way of seeing it, this poor guy didn't know how to be grateful. And, you know, he's going to have a lot of difficulty in his life, I know, I'm sure. And the way to deal with that, or to supplement that in his case, was by being incredibly arrogant. And that's not something you can support or that can support you. When it comes to real critical situations. So, I like the question, what are you grateful for? Because, you know, it's in a deeper way, it's a question about the question is, are you able to be grateful at all? And that's a very existential question.
I'm very curious now. What does success mean for you?
Nothing.
Nothing at all? Or can you translate it to other parts of your life or how you feel within yourself?
Well, you know, of course, there's... there's an issue or there's probably everybody has this yearning or this desire to find recognition. And I've experienced so much recognition from my friends or people who really matter for me. So they recognized me in the deepest sense of that word. And there's a deep connection then between us. That's all. You know, what more would you need? And this doesn't translate in any way into like success in whatever kind of business ways or economic or...
And what drives you forward or keeps you going with your work, with your music, with your composing, with your playing, or for giving it on to, passing it on to young students who come to you, young composers?
Maybe in an image, there's a fire in me that pushes me in a way out of myself. That's the push. Then there is, you know, I, with my students or with friends, I recognize the fire that's in them. And that is pulling me. So it's a pushing and a pulling. And then in it can happen that like the whole situation that's around you is on fire. Well, and then in a way it's all fire, yeah. It's an image, but maybe it tells a little bit, maybe, you know, a word for that might be love. A love that goes beyond like very individual. It's probably that what drives or the whole cosmos, hopefully.
Do you have a vision?
A vision? Of something to come or...
Whatever it is for you.
You know, in a way... in a way... That's what we do, no? Articulating dreams. Maybe in the best case, a piece of music or an a musical situation that is kind of that is proposed by a piece is the articulation of a dream. How we could deal with each other and how we could communicate, interact with each other in a deep and you know, it's like when we enter a musical situation, when it's a really strong musical situation, we start in a way dreaming of a world as it could be. So it's all about dreaming in a way. Like articulating dreams. What about this? How would the how would it be to be in a world that is like the five orchestra pieces by Webern, or you know? Sometimes can also be nightmares. Yeah, they also have to be articulated somehow.
My last question for today is, which tip or advice would you like to give a young artist?
It's an advice that probably holds also for artists that are not young anymore, but maybe... Listen if something, someone speaks to you, listen if there's a call that you can respond to, or a call that takes you into a responsibility. Don't worry, there will be a call, you know, there will be a call, but be patient. Don't act too quickly. Don't think you are in the business of making something. So, instead of listen, I could also say hope.
That is a very last, nice, final word. I thank you very much for the interview, for taking your time to be here with me, Antoine. And I see you around.
Yes, thank you very much. It was really my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this wonderful interview with Antoine Beuger. I'm sure he could inspire you. And now, I'm looking forward to your ideas and suggestions. And you can do this through Facebook. Thank you very much that you were listening to me on this podcast today. I hope that you liked it and it inspired you. And I would be very grateful if you could take some time and give me and this podcast a good valuation on iTunes. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.